This is Panel by Panel, a show designed specifically to help you make sense of the decades of continuity surrounding your favorite comic events. Hosted by Uncle George Doro, who picked up his first comic book from the spinning rack at a corner convenience store, and Epic Boss McFall, who gets his comics online and binges via graphic novel and trade paperback. This week, it's part two of the Marvel Comics event, Fear Itself. And if you thought there were a few spoilers last episode, you have not seen anything yet. This one is all about the spoilers for Fear Itself.
Welcome to Panel by Panel. I'm Charles McFall.
And I'm Uncle George.
And we're going to talk about spoilers. We're going to talk about the actual episodes or the issues of what goes on here with Fear Itself. Part one was the overall arc. If you've missed that, go back and listen to it. It's the episode just before this. But now we're going to talk about each of the seven episodes. And there's actually a point one, two, and three, the epilogue issues, that answered a few things, but really didn't tell me anything, but we'll get there. So let's, George, why don't you paint the picture of how this story is opening with the first issue?
Okay, I'm pulling it up here at the moment, but as I recall, the flashpoint for this story, a plan of Sin, the daughter of the Red Skull, who is now the current Red Skull, leading a team of, I believe, Hydra soldiers to some mysterious place in the Antarctic.
And she's got her father's diary.
Right.
Something like
right.
that.
Right. And there's a passage in there that explains that there is an object of extreme power hidden in this base, which is guarded by Hydra scientists and guards. And essentially, they become cannon fodder.
They're essentially leftover. They're leftover Nazis, right?
Yes.
Now, the question is, are they immortal Nazis? Well, not immortal because she kills them, but are they somehow sustained Nazis, or do they raise their own children in this underwater base? I'm not really clear here.
I think you're not clear because that was never really explained. You don't know if they are, they have been there since the 40s, or if this is like a third generation of Nazi scientists and guards.
I do love that she called them librarians at one point as an insult. What's interesting is apparently the instructions left behind were just kill everything. Just kill everything that comes in here. Because she looks exactly like the Red Skull. She would think, oh, you know, Heil Hitler. You'd think, you know, whatever they said to the Red Skull. And they let her through. But no, they're just blasting away. And I totally got a cereal commercial out of it as she's going through. I totally read in the vein of she's talking about her dad leaving librarians behind. I heard, silly dad, guards are for fools or something. Yeah, something along silly rabbit, you know, tricks are for kids there. So yeah, so Kira, she's breaking into the vault.
Yes. And what she is intending to get is an Asgardian hammer. Even though she considers herself worthy, it's actually for someone who is willing to create fear and havoc and destruction in the world. And so,
and oddly enough, the Red Skull himself could not lift it. It couldn't trigger it.
Right. So there is a sense of there are particular characters that are worthy or that are somehow in tune with this hammer and the ones that will be coming later in the story, so that either one person or maybe just a small handful are able to be the ones who are able to possess the hammer.
You almost get the sense after we read through it, you almost get the sense with Sin, the reason she was able to be the first is because she was able to be molded. She had that need to get her daddy's approval. She definitely wanted to watch the world burn. She had no problems with, you know, mass destruction, mass murder, all that stuff. But the other side of it was the serpent needed somebody who would follow him and him alone. And you kind of get that vibe that maybe she was the one.
Yes. It makes it seem that she was born and bred for this role.
Right. And maybe she was. I mean, with the Red Skull and how messed up he was, maybe he picked up on something that needed to be done and did it. You never know. Silly Nazis. Experimentations for kids. So I don't know. So she gets it and immediately turns into Scotty. Right?
Yeah, not to be confused with Engineer Scotty.
I know, right? Oh, I had so many Star Trek jokes as I was reading this thing. It's every time you read it, it's like, ah. It's possible I'm not even saying it correctly, but yeah, in my mind and in George's mind, it's Scotty.
Yeah, that's how it looks. So that's how I'm pronouncing it in my head when I'm reading.
Did you find it weird that she kept saying daddy all the time?
No, I think it fits in with the character as she was established when I was first exposed to her.
Okay. I knew of her. I knew of some of the background, but again, you know, I'd been out of the loop. And so this was my major dealing with her. I'm like, you got issues, darling. But of course, I think maybe that's the point.
Yeah.
You know, is that she definitely has issues.
But once she gets the hammer, she no longer considers the Red Skull her father. The character that she is now heading to release from his centuries-old prison that she considers her father for the rest of the story.
Yeah, and that would be?
That's Odin's brother, or Odin's estranged brother, Kull Borson.
Yep. And again, this is the first time. In fact, this is the first time that Asgardians have even heard of this character. You know, it's a very minion moment in the book when he says something about the serpent being his brother, and all the Warriors Three go, "What?" You know, it was fun. I thought the artwork was really good. So she's following the lead of the hammer, right? She's carrying the first hammer, and it's leading her to the serpent, and she's going into the deepest, darkest depths of the ocean. Right, this is where this. Of course, they're going to lock up the baddest of bad guys in Asgardian history on Midgard, of all places, you know, on Earth, as opposed to any of the other seven or nine realms or however many your realms there are. The artwork, though, with the sea dragons and how they're protecting the seal. Yeah, at first I thought they were, because he's a serpent, I thought they were tied into him. But then you realize they're guarding the pit. So somehow Odin set some serpents forth to I'm not entirely. This is a little convoluted, to be honest, to start the book off.
Well, the sea serpents are there in service of Asgard to keep anybody from trying to release Borson. So.
And it did not work. But I loved how it was drawn. I mean, I totally got a sense of action. On these still panels, I totally get that sense of action of her fighting the three dragons, and it is really well done. It's one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, Stuart Immonen did a fine job, in my opinion.
Yeah. And, of course, she breaks through the seal because of the hammer, and there's this dude who's older than freaking dirt, and he comes out, and he calls himself the Serpent. And does he call down? I think he calls down the hammers at the end of the first book, doesn't he?
I think that is the cliffhanger for the first installment.
Yeah. So he calls forth his children, as he calls them, which presumably the hammers are not his children. The hammers are obviously the weapon and the vehicle to control whoever is worthy of carrying it. But his children being the ones who actually get called to pick up the hammer. And that leads us into part two. Or not part two, but the book two. Kind of hoping for a breakdown of the individual books, to like a little synopsis. That would have been helpful here, because I don't remember exact timelines. Let's go down the list of who ends up with the hammers, because that pretty much all happens in the second book.
Yeah, over the course of the second and third, as I recall.
Yeah. So there's a lot of setup. So the first three books out of seven, the first three books are all set up, right?
Yes.
Of course, we got Skadi, who is Sin, and she's the herald of the serpent. Kurth was a breaker of stone, and you know what? I'm going to have to unlock or actually go into a different... Okay, Kurth was Juggernaut, which was great, right?
For the small amount that he appeared here, yeah.
Yeah.
I figure that there was a lot more going on in the X-Men portion of Fear itself.
Right, and I plan on digging through some of that as a follow-up.
Yeah.
Let's see. But what I loved about that scene, right? So he's in Rikers, maximum security, and they've got this thing drawn like he's doing physical tests, and he's punching the crap out of this massive piece of metal, and they're scoring how hard he hits. And what I love about it is this kind of set up like an observatory, so you kind of see into what they're doing. And there's three little normal humans with guns at Juggernaut with his freaking helmet on. And just, I'm like, What's keeping him there?
Exactly.
What in the world is what is keeping him? Three humans are not going to do crap to him. It cracked me up, and then the hammer hit. But he seemed like a reformed guy in this particular 3 seconds that you get before the hammer hits, right? He seems to be cooperating, following. And this is, I don't know, I was about to say this is post House of M, but that's not true. So it was funny to me. It just kind of stuck out. It was a very Jerry Seinfeld moment. Like, what's up with this? I can't even do it. What's up with this juggernaut? And then he becomes a Kurth, Breaker of Stone. And you do see him a little bit, but not a ton. And then I'll let you tackle Null.
Let's see. Null was the Hulk, right?
Yes. Null, Breaker of Worlds.
He and Betty Ross Banner, now the Red She-Hulk, which is one of the worst character names. I hope they change her eventually. They are, I guess, just hanging out in South America in the Amazon, the jungles near the Amazon somewhere.
Right.
That is where Null's hammer touches down. And against his better judgment, Hulk reaches for it, and he is transformed into Null, Breaker of Worlds.
It seems like, and this was the first one that started showing that there really wasn't a, ooh, what's this moment there? And it brings it out more and more as we discover the characters. But it showed that there was almost a compulsion to do this. Like, the timing was, God, I would love to have seen this in like a 30-book run instead of a 7-book run, because you really could have gotten into how it was set up in the ancient days, and the timings had to be right. Because if you think about it, before the establishment of superheroes in the Marvel Universe, presumably there was a time that superheroes were not nearly as normal or rampant in the Marvel Universe of history, right?
Right.
George Washington didn't take over, didn't fight Britain with a Hulk on his side.
Right.
So the timing had to be right to have all these superheroes able to be worthy of these hammers. And it would have been a nice, deeper story, but you start to see the compulsion that he had. But I love that he's struggling, even as a Hulk, he's struggling to communicate through the compulsion. And that particular mini story ends with Betty Rudd. And the fear they drew on her face was excellent.
Yeah.
It was really well done. The next one would be, is it Titania? Is that how you say it?
That's how I say it. Yeah, Titania.
Okay, Titania. She and the Absorbing Man are in some other prison somewhere in the world, and they're breaking rocks, you know, it's a chain gang type deal, and this thing smashes in, and Absorbing Man tries to grab it, and he can't absorb it, he can't do anything, and she's like, move. And she's like, no, baby, I'm telling you. She grabs it and turns into, who's she?
She is Skrull, Breaker of Men.
Well, that's a fitting fit. And then she tells him, hey, we'll go get your hammer. But there's a line. I wish I could remember exactly what the line is. It tickled me pink, because she said, do you hear that noise? Do you hear it singing to me? It's like crying babies in broken glass or something like that. She thought it was so beautiful. Like these horrible two sounds put together. That's how she described it. And so that was that. So she's like, hey, Absorbing Man, let's go over here and get yours. And then they do, and that's the next. Nope, that's not the next one. The next one is Necrod.
Nercod, the Breaker of Oceans.
Nercod. I always say that wrong. I don't know why I reverse the E and the R. I always do that. I always read it. Anyway.
I think Necrod just sounds better myself, but.
Maybe they should ask me.
Yeah, and that is Atuma, a Submariner villain, a warlord of Atlantis who opposed Namor in the past. He gets his hammer to become Breaker of Oceans.
And all you really see is when, after everybody has their hammers, I think it's the end of book 3, the serpent is talking to them, presumably through the hammers. He's communicating to Scotty, who's with him, but at the same time sending his message out to his children. And the only thing you know about Atuma is this is the first shot you get of him. He's swinging his hammer, busting an oil pipeline underwater. And that's it. There's no dialogue. There's no him picking up the hammer. There's just a panel. of him busting up something.
And then there's another scene that ties into him a little later, where I think it's a scene somewhere in Canada, the Pacific coast of Canada, young boys fishing off a pier.
Yes, yes.
A blue skin body floats to the top and then followed by another and then dozens more. And you realize that these are Atlanteans who have been killed by Nurkod.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty brutal. It's pretty stinking brutal. But you're right. They don't really focus on him himself much. I don't know very much about Atuma at all. It was maybe at the time is a big story. Maybe at the time it was really going on there.
Well, I'm sure that those stories had to have taken place in another parallel series to this.
Probably.
Unless I had the list with me, I could probably point it out, but it's just kind of in the background for this part of the story.
Now, overall, and I did read some of the Iron Man books that dealt with this. I really want to hunt this side story down. This was my favorite of all of them. Mock Breaker of Faith, and holy crap what they did with that was faith breaking. I mean, it was just amazing.
And now this is the Grey Gargoyle, and he's in Paris, is that right?
That's correct. Paul Pierre Duval, the Grey Gargoyle.
Okay.
And he's a fiction— oh, of course, I love Wikipedia. He's a fictional character. Really? Oh, sorry, I guess I'll stop reading now. He's often an enemy of Thor, Iron Man, or Captain America is how he's typically used. I've heard of him a little bit. Wasn't that familiar. He's the Medusa. No, okay. He's the Greek Medusa of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or the Marvel Universe, period. He turns people into stone. That's his power. Mm-hmm. And even though he's a bad guy, the way Iron Man deals with him later and talks to him, it seems like he's not like total evil. He just uses his powers for bad, perhaps. Because, I mean, Iron Man is lecturing the crap out of him. We'll get to that later. But his power is pretty powerful, right? He can turn people into stone. And he gets his hammer and turns the entire city to stone, like, instantly, right?
Yeah.
And the reactions. And you get more of that. You don't get a whole lot of that in the main story. You get a little bit of it. But if you read Iron Man, it's Fear Itself, Invincible Iron Man, or something like that. It's the Iron Man, the first spinoff of Iron Man under the headline Fear Itself. He goes to Paris to figure out what's going on and almost gets taken out instantly by the Grey Gargoyle. It was a battle and a half.
Uh-huh.
And he's so torn up. I mean, you know, Tony Stark is the essential tortured soul, right? And as they're fighting, he's being knocked through the statues. He doesn't realize what they are. And at some point, he stops fighting long enough to look around. Because as he comes in, the Grey Gargoyle hits him. So he's taken off guard. He has no idea what's happened. And he gets blasted, and he's destroying statues and just fighting like he does. He just goes in guns blazing, right?
Yes.
And at some point through this battle, he stops and realizes that the Grey Gargoyle has turned the entire city to statues. And he's been blasting through these statues, and he's killing people.
Right.
Because essentially the Grey Gargoyle doesn't kill people when he turns them to stone.
Right. Because it's been established that they can be reverted because he's right. Turned the Avengers into stone several times and they all come back.
But when you're in pieces, do you really?
It's kind of tough then.
I know. I mean, they don't totally touch on it in this book, but they have that moment of him, of Tony going, "Oh crap, I have to change everything." And they go on the fight in that little side note. So if you read this storyline, try to check out some of the side stories, include especially the Iron Man one, because it to me, it did a really, really great job. Because when his name is Breaker of Faith, you know, you see this kind of thing happen, and it would destroy your faith. It would in that universe. In the main story, they did not deal with Mach enough, because he, to me, had more repercussions of what truly could have happened with these hammers than any of the other worthy.
Yeah, he only gets a few panels, but I do remember one of them being very powerful, and it sticks out in my memory, where a long shot of a scene in Paris, somewhere in the city,
yep.
And he is with his hammer, and he is standing on this tremendous pile of bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, all statues, but still.
Right.
Yeah, that was pretty good as far as bad goes in my mind. They did that one right. You can take this next one because I can't pronounce that.
Okay, who are we looking at? Are we looking at Greythoth? Yeah, Greythoth is who Absorbing Man becomes. Greythoth, breaker of
wills, I think.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, breaker of wills.
Yep, there it is, breaker of wills. Yeah, and it's hard to remember some of these because except for Angrier, who we'll get to later, except for Null, yeah, pretty much those two. The other five are pretty much just background characters throughout the story. There's really not a lot of focus on them. They get their scenes where they get the hammers, and then you see a little of what they've been, what kind of destruction they've been wreaking, but that's about it.
Yeah, you'll get more as you do. This is definitely one of those that you need that time to dig into the side storylines. But as opposed to War of Kings, for me personally, when I dug into the side stories, some of them I cared about, obviously, like with the Grey Gargoyle. I really cared about that side story. But some of them I didn't. And then, of course, I ran into that disconnect of I don't, like you're talking about the Red Hulk or the Green Hulk and Dracula, like, or Red Hulk, whichever one it was. Right. Like, this isn't looping back. I don't understand. Okay. And the Absorbing Man, he was such a non-essential character in this whole thing, right?
Yeah, he's barely present at any scene.
I'm trying to imagine the last battle. The last few battles that was in the last book. I cannot really remember him standing out. I remember a lot of these others and what happened to him. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, I remember going through the mental checklist when they're all standing there lined up with the exception of Angrier and Null. You know, that's about it.
And then, of course, we jump to Angrier, who is the Thing, which I thought Breaker of Souls and the hammer hit right there in Yancey Street, which is his stomping grounds. And this being the biggest hearted softy superhero in Marvel, you know, he's just always rock hard on the outside, super hard or super soft and loving on the inside, just wants to take care of everybody, wants to set things straight. That's why he gets angry. He refuses to get into certain battles. I mean, that comes into play in Civil War. He's just this great guy who loves people, and for him to get a hammer, Breaker of Souls was perfect for him.
Yeah, you know, Ben Grimm's a favorite from way back. He's always been a fun character to read, whether he was in Fantastic Four or Marvel 2-in-1, which was his team-up book, or his own solo series. They were just generally a lot of fun to read because, you know, one of the things that is really endearing about him is his speech pattern, you know, just very Brooklyn, New York.
Very, very much. Well, I think they pulled from different parts of the New York culture in that section. They got the speech pattern. They got the generality of community takes care of itself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I see in him a little bit of that Jewish grandmother that, do this. It's good for you. Uh-huh. You know, the feeding you part, even though he didn't like hand out food to people, but the, hey, no. This is good for you. Trust me. It's good. Yeah, I mean, it makes him such an endearing character that when you turn him into this massively strong bad guy.
Yeah.
Breaker of Souls is perfect title for him.
Yeah, it was one of those things that, didn't want to see that happen, but okay, it's going to be a cool battle.
And, yeah, I was about to spoil something even more, but we'll get to that as we go through. So that's book 1-3. 4 kind of shows some of the havoc with the rest of the world catching up, going, oh crap, what's going on? Mm-hmm. It shows Odin in one of these books early on. He declares, we're pulling out. We're going back to Asgard, even though Asgard didn't exist technically. I mean, technically it's a planet, but, you know, it's in ruins. We're leaving Earth. And Thor's like, the hell you are. And Thor thought he's going to whoop some butt, right?
Yeah.
And Odin just whipped him around like a little boy.
Yep.
And ends up throwing him in jail and has the Warriors 3 dragging him back to Asgard. And ultimately, and I can't remember because my books are mixing up in my head. Do you remember if Loki set Thor free, or did Odin finally just say, you know what, you're going to be this way, go and defend Earth, we're coming to burn it?
Yeah, Loki put the guards to sleep with some drugged food and allowed Thor to escape from his Asgardian prison. And so the first thing Thor did, I don't remember if he confronted Odin before he left Asgard, but he made his way back to Earth to defend the world he loves.
Right. Yeah, I think he made it back to Earth first. Then later, Odin kind of realized he had done that, and he ends up getting this armor and stuff. That was really cool. We'll get into those weapons.
Yes, yes.
Later, too. So they just leave. And Odin's whole plan is the only way for the serpent to be strong is for the Earth, because that's where he is. He's on Earth. So for Midgard to be in total turmoil, it's all the fear, it's all the dread, all the anger, all the war is strengthening him. And you do see him go from this old as dirt, feeble old man to a very young and powerful warrior.
Yeah, the more fear and destruction that reign on the world, the stronger and younger he becomes.
Yes. And so it makes sense. What's the way to stop that? Remove the fuel.
Yes.
They had a special term for it. Basically, he was going to burn the earth, wasn't he?
I think that's how he put it. Burn Midgard.
Yeah. They had some better word for it, some very Odin-esque word. I don't know. I remember it just obviously didn't make that big of an impression because I don't remember what he said. So you have that going on through these books. So Thor does come back to Earth. He explains to the Avengers this is what's going on. And the Avengers, every superhero is getting their asses handed to them. Very, very powerful scene in, I believe it's New York, with Captain America and the Avengers. And they are just getting, I mean, slaughter is not the right word because they don't get killed. Well, actually, no, I take that back. Scotty's there, right? She beamed down. and the Captain America at the time, which is Bucky Barnes, because Steve Rogers is not Cap. He whatever has happened before this, he has put the mantle down. He is he's not even a full S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, but he's kind of a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And, you know, he doesn't want to be a part of this. And so Bucky's the icon. And he sees Scotty. He sees Sin. And he knows he's defeated Sin before, so he charges in, and what happened?
Oh, he loses badly.
he didn't even get started, right?
Yeah, he's no match. The battle ends as with the characters, the way they're established, the way it should. And here's a spoiler. Scotty kills Captain America, a.k.a. Bucky.
Scotty or the serpent who broke the shield?
That comes later in the story.
That comes later. Okay. She sees him coming. She's like, puny human.
Essentially.
And just also puts her hammer right through his chest. And he just stands there and goes, what? And falls over dead.
Yeah.
And like, and even I'm left, that great scene, because I'm left going, what just happened? he what? I mean, just nothing. Just done. And she's like, yeah, whatever. And so Steve Rogers is getting involved and other people. And of course, they run to Bucky, and just this destruction, this is horribleness going on, and they're trying to get Thor. Got his ass handed to him too. Thor comes in right behind that, and Scotty beats the crap out of him. Because the scene I'm building up to here in my mind is them taking Thor as quickly as they can, six of them, to the portal to get him back to Asgard, so they can heal him in Asgard.
Yeah, there's a scene where Thor confronts Carl Borson. Borson essentially just basically lifts his hand and says, "Be gone." And Thor finds himself in the middle of Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Approaching down the street is two of the worthy, Null, who is the Hulk, and Angrier, who is the Thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I'm a little, yeah, yes. So you're filling in the gaps that I'm missing. So I'm thinking of the end. So you're right. So go ahead and talk about that battle.
Yeah, they set this up at the end of issue 4, and you know that a huge battle royale is coming. Thor has faced the Thing. Thor has faced the Hulk, but I don't think he's ever faced the two of them together, especially when they're possessed by Asgardian-powered hammers. Yeah. So you know that this is just not going to go well for Thor.
But he overcomes at a cost.
He does.
At a really high cost all the way around.
So they continue the battle in issue 5. Guess we can jump ahead to the point where the battle more is more or less a stalemate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's fighting. He's not gaining any ground.
You can even argue that he's losing.
Yes.
Because, I mean, it's Super Hulk and Super Thing.
Exactly. He's grappling with the Hulk, and somehow his hammer has been dislodged from him. So he calls his hammer to him at the moment that the Thing is between himself and his hammer. And the hammer just punches right through Thing's chest. So that puts Angrier out of commission.
And you don't have a heart if you didn't get at least a little misty-eyed at that.
Oh, yeah.
It blatantly destroys Thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I know this is a Marvel comic. He's going to get better.
Yeah, put a Band-Aid on it. It's just because you have a gaping hole in your chest with Asgardian energy blowing out of it like an arc reactor, you're fine. Walk it off. Yeah, that's the Marvel way. And right after that, he catches his hammer, he builds up this blow that blasts the Hulk somewhere else.
Into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And as I found out later.
Good, because I didn't.
Hulk completes his trajectory and then ends up landing in Eastern Europe. And then so that's where that leads into his confrontation with Dracula and his army of vampires.
Talk about, not you, of course, the comic. Talk about your awkward segue.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, guys, we want to, Halloween's coming. We'd love to work in some kind of vampire story. And so as they're writing it, they drop the word to the guy who's writing this, like, hey, just blast him out. We'll take care of the rest. Just knock him in orbit. We got this.
Apparently, this is an offshoot of a series that came out a few years back called Captain Britain and MI-13. Which is a takeoff on the real-life MI5 and MI6, Britain's domestic and foreign security spy organizations. MI13, as you would guess from the number, deals with supernatural threats.
You know, I didn't even put that together.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There was a multi-issue arc where Dracula invades Britain with an army of vampires trying to create a vampire nation. So eventually he and his vampires are settled back in Transylvania. And that's where that particular 3-issue series finds him confronting the Hulk.
So, okay, good. That was one of my questions. Like, I never knew what the hell happened to the Hulk after that. You know, he just disappeared. Second spoiler, the Thing is fine. Franklin heals him using his powers that he's promised to never use. But he's like, come on, it's been... What is Franklin's powers? Because I know he can astral project, but he does some kind of warping reality like the Scarlet Witch or just brought it back to life. I don't follow exactly what he's able to do.
The only way I can read his powers is that he's got godlike powers. He can do anything because over the years, he's established that he's got telepathy. He's got telekinesis. He's got precognition. He's got just about every kind of mental ability that's ever been established in the Marvel Universe. And plus, he has all kinds of what I would guess are cosmic abilities, similar to the Silver Surfer. He can create things. And in the Onslaught series, he created a pocket universe in order to save the Fantastic Four and the Avengers and several other heroes. And essentially, he can bring somebody back from the brink of death. So that's what he's about to do here.
I don't know if they deal with Franklin a whole lot nowadays, but I kind of would love it to turn out that he grows up to be a Watcher. Because it kind of sounds like that, right? All powerful, omnipotent everywhere. But at the same time, he has his daddy's brain. So he's very calculated and non-emotional at times.
Well, he may eventually grow up to be a character similar to Watcher, but they are an alien race unto themselves.
That's true.
So
maybe he's Galactus Jr. We just don't know it. Susan stepped out on you.
Could be the Galactus of the next universe.
There you go. So that was that battle. And Thor's left, depleted, destroyed, alive, but barely. And at the end of that battle, you know, Bucky's already dead and everything's going on right there in New York. And I remember there was a line with Steve Rogers and I think it's Falcon. It could have been Goliath. I can't remember who exactly he was talking to. No. I think it might have been Luke Cage. Steve Rogers, Luke Cage, and some the New York people, right? They were street level mixed with Avenger. They're all there because it's just epic, catastrophic event. And Steve's like, quickly, let's grab Thor up and get him to Asgard. And the line was, I think Luke Cage's like, look at the people. We can't leave them. We can't let them see it. This feels like retreat.
Yes.
That's horrible. We have to stand out. And Steve Rogers went, no, this is retreat. We lost. And for him to say that in that moment, even though I know it's just this 2D rendering, I was like, no.
Yeah, that was,
no, Captain.
That was the most un-Captain America-like thing that has ever been written for him.
But it really plays into his mentality and what's to come next, because he was, whatever happened before this, he was a broken man.
Yes.
You know, to walk away from the mantle of Captain America, to even as this opens up, he's out there with Sharon Carter, which in this universe, I'm not exactly sure how Sharon's at his side when she was, I know her as the early days of Cap in World War II.
Well, that's, you're confusing Peggy Carter and Sharon Carter.
Yes, I am. Who's Sharon Carter then?
If I'm remembering my Marvel mythos correctly, Sharon Carter is actually Peggy Carter's daughter.
Okay, that would make actually tons of sense.
Yes.
You're right. Sometimes I just look at the last names. I don't really put it together. So you're right. It's confusing Peggy and Sharon. That makes sense. But anyway, they're in the middle of something going on. There's a riot, and they're there as S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And, you know, he's kind of being bitter about the job there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is an I'd love to know what happened beforehand. And at some point, I probably will go back and find out. So that goes on.
Well, you know, he did survive an assassination, not just an attempt, but an assassination. He was dead for a while.
Yeah. You know, I thought that was Civil War, but apparently it's not. I can't remember when he died and what happened.
That was
the
finale of Civil War.
Not in the main core. In the main core, he goes, it must have been an epilogue. Because I've read the core, and the core, he just ends up in jail, and they end it.
I think you're right. Yeah, but it was the first major thing that happened post-Civil War.
Yeah, I think, because that's one thing, I was like, you know, Cap dies as a major part of Civil War.
Yes.
But apparently it was not in the core. So, again, we're going to deal with that in another episode.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
That tells us we have to find the answer to that question, because, you know, we have that question.
Yeah, for once, Charles, you're right.
I'll take it. I will take it. I remember experiencing things. I don't remember details. So I'll take for once I'm right. So they get him back to Asgard. And Luke says, I'm not going. We're going to keep a team here. Tony Stark shows up because he has a plan. And so him and a few others, I can't remember exactly who, end up taking Thor to Asgard. The rest stay behind to help clean up the mess, to go track down the worthy, to regroup, as it were. And then Tony, of course, Odin sees Thor almost dead, and he's like, all right, you know what? If you're going to be like this, you're still my son. And this is the Odin I like, because I know there's been versions of Odin that's just this cold universal god, right? Things go my way, screw you guys. But then there's this Odin that has that love in him. He sees what's happening to the sun, even though he has the answer, and the answer is take away the fuel and the fire will not burn. That will defeat the serpent. He'll kill the serpent. It'll be done. He made that mistake before because he showed love to his brother and spared him by locking him up, and now we're dealing with it again. So then he sees his son going, okay, even though my answer is still the answer and I'm still coming, I love you. I want you to have the best shot possible, and you're going to die doing this anyway. Let me help you out. So he heals him. He gives him this very special armor and sword that if we were doing crossovers again from outside the universe, it'd be Valyrian steel. Game of Thrones reference there for everybody at home. There you go. If it'll laugh, he'll get it. So Asgard is this great Asgardian knight outfit, this great Asgardian sword. It was a sword that defeated the serpent the first time. So he hooks him up with that. And in the meantime, Tony gives up everything, right? He's praying to the gods. And actually, I take that back. He was not at the portal in New York. He was at the portal in Broxton, I think. Broxton. And he's praying to Odin. And he's like, I've given up everything. I've given this. Here's the one thing that I've never given anybody. And he didn't even say it. He just starts drinking. And you go, he's giving his sobriety up to Odin. And that got Odin's attention. But the ultimate idea is, did Tony do what Tony does best? And that's make weapons. And he needs the dwarves and I believe the metal is called Uru.
Yes.
Metal. Man, the team up on this thing was so powerful. We'll get to what they did after. But they essentially make their own worthy with weapons. Go ahead and you tell me about your take on the weapons and how that played out.
I thought, oh, this is one of the coolest parts of this story. You got the Avengers, including Iron Man, Hawkeye, Black Widow, Spider-Man, Wolverine, and they are going to be given these weapons and armor created by the dwarves of Asgard.
I believe so, yes.
Who are the metalsmiths. And so they have all this Uru-infused armor and weaponry. And that's just a really cool concept that really plays on the kid in me.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, this is some neat stuff.
I wanted the toys to play with. I was like, that's so awesome. Can I keep it?
Exactly.
And Tony himself.
Yeah,
he gets suited.
He actually dives into the molten Uru.
And they didn't really explain that a little bit, but they're like, the weapons are done.
Mm-hmm.
And he's showing them off to Odin. They're at the forge. And Odin says, well, if you want my blessing, you know what you have to do. And Thor's here going, wait, what? And Iron Man didn't even hesitate. He's like, yep, bye. He dives headfirst into the presumably molten lava. I mean, I don't know exactly what that stuff is, the molten Uru.
Yeah, it's a mystical metal, so okay, I can buy that. With the proper incantations, it won't harm him.
Well, and it's Odin, right? Odin can make anything happen. I think Odin wanted to see the sacrifice, and he blessed him before he hit. That's kind of my take on it. Because that was the line coming out of it. You see that happening, and I think it cuts to something else. And everybody, basically, it's that movie moment that you see coming. It's like, oh my God, we're about to die. Where is everybody? And boom, the portal opens, and here comes the team with all the new weapons. And well, actually, it's Iron Man and whoever went, they bring the weapons back. The dwarves bring them too, and they start handing them out. And the line is, as they're about to go into battle, of course, he looks like Iron Man meets Destroyer. I mean, he just looks epically awesome, right?
Yes.
And as does Thor, who's, you know, Sir Knight Thor now. And his line is, basically, be careful with the weapons. They've been blessed by Odin, whatever that means, so expect things to happen. And then they didn't.
Yeah.
Then they didn't.
Yeah, we get a really abbreviated final battle. And pretty much the battle begins.
This has got to be in the verse, right? It's got to be in the extra sprawl. Because they played up that battle too much to give us two pages of it.
I mean, we got a 6-issue lead into this battle.
Yeah, there's got to be. Again, I'm going to go back and finish, as I think you might, and our listeners might as well. But it's got to be in those side stories. Because 6-issue lead up, we get two pages.
The bulk of the final issue is dealing with the battle between Thor and the Serpent. And at this point, Kullborsen is literally a serpent. He has changed into an enormous dragon serpent creature that's, a thousand feet long or something.
Yeah. And right before that, as all this was going, I think the scene they cut to was Steve Rogers taking up the Captain Mantle because Bucky's dead and goes back in as only he can do.
Yep.
And throws the shield at Cole, and Cole catches it and snaps it into a dozen pieces.
Yeah. And that was probably the most surprising moment for me in the comic, because I thought, oh, that can't happen, but yeah.
That was kind of his reaction too, wasn't it?
I guess it makes sense, because you're talking about somebody who has the power of Odin, and Odin is one of the most powerful beings in the Marvel Universe. So I presume Odin could do the same thing, so why not Borson?
Right. Odin's the All-Father. I mean, he can change reality, right? Cole has been saying he's the true All-Father. So, you would imagine that their powers are on par. So then this final battle happens, and it plays out in just a few panels, it seems like. I mean, Thor has a few witty lines. The dragon tries to eat him. Thor kills him.
Yeah.
And true to the legend, takes 4 steps and drops dead.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why?
To fulfill the
blood
prophecy.
For blood? I mean, but there was no mortal injury. The only thing you're left to ask why, but the only thing I can think of is because that was the lock. That was, they alluded to it a little bit. They don't blatantly talk about it, but he says, because Thor and Kull go up head to head before this at some point. And he tells him, he goes, oh, your father didn't tell you to take Allfather blood. I don't remember what he referred to it as, but to take Borson's blood or whatever. You have to have that. You have to give blood to take blood. So either Odin has to die or Thor has to die.
Okay. Yeah.
They don't really explain it. They don't say why it was tied in or how. And you kind of, at first I read it as it's going to be just this epic battle that nobody comes out alive. You sacrifice yourself for the greater good. Mm-hmm. But in reality, Thor goes smack, 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 stab. Ha, you're dead. Step, step, step. Uh-oh, I'm dead. It's like, okay, I'm lost. Okay.
Until you pointed out that there was mystical connection established by the prophecy, I didn't understand why Thor died. But what you're saying there kind of makes sense and fits into the storyline.
And honestly, that might have been in some of the sprawl. The verse isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I tried to coin it and I couldn't. But the sprawl works. You know, some of the sprawl, some of the side story.
Right.
It might have been there, but there was a moment where they speak to each other before everything really goes down. And that might be where he banishes him. He's talking to him, and then he says, be gone, and Thor's now in Brooklyn. That might have been that moment. But yeah, that's about it. It didn't really explain why. So here's where I get lost for the rest of it, okay? He dies. The battle's over. And the Asgardian worthy have been fighting the serpent worthy, holding them at bay so that Thor could have this fight, right?
Yes.
And then they all just kind of, in G.I. Joe fashion, everybody just kind of stops fighting. And goes, oh, the battle's over. I guess we give up. And then the hammers, I can't remember. I think Odin casts the hammers back out into the universe.
Yes, he does.
Everybody's back to normal. Bad guys are arrested. Good guys are told it's not their fault. They jump to a funeral pyre for Thor. Odin comes down and says something about his son, grabs the body, goes to hell, I guess, goes to heaven. And all of a sudden, somehow, Asgardians get locked out.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
The ending is quite puzzling. I agree with you. It's, you know, what was that about? I don't know that 30 issues is the right number for this, but I think this would have been ideal in 10 issues, maybe 12.
Okay. I mean, 30 was just a number. I just want to see him really dive in.
And I would prefer for all the events to happen in the core series. They can expand on certain things in the peripheral series, but if I'm just reading the 7-issue series, I would kind of like to know why these epilogues are going the way they are. What, as you said, it's not adding up.
Yeah. So here's what the wiki says. It comes down to a couple of sentences. The final battle ended up in Broxton for no apparent reason. But Thor and Bucky are mourned by their allies. Odin returns to Asgard with the corpse of his brother, Kull. Now, that's where I got confused. I could have sworn he was picking up Thor.
Oh, yeah.
I could have sworn everybody was around and Odin was holding him like a baby almost.
Yeah, I was going through the same confusion.
But it says here is Kull. So according to this, Odin returns to Asgard with the corpse of his brother Kull, sealing off Asgard from Hermod and a number of other Asgardians who are left on Earth. And they're as confused as we are. I mean, they're like, what just happened? They basically, that's the dialogue, right? The Asgardians are on Earth going, huh?
Oh, I think we're here for good.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Now, here's the other thing. These Asgardian weapons are so badass. I was like, oh, let us keep them. Nope, the Stark Asgardian weapons are returned to Asgard to be melted, which you kind of saw coming.
Yeah.
With the exception of the Red She-Hulk, who retains hers, according to the wiki. Which, like, why? Why does she get it? I don't understand.
Maybe so that the color is the only is not the only thing distinguishing her from She-Hulk.
Maybe. I think Asgardian weapons are awesome. Oh, and Iron Man and the dwarves do work together. They put together, they put the shield back together. So it's mostly vibranium, but with some Uru-infused enhancements now.
Yes.
And it's got scars on it, which is actually pretty epic.
Yeah.
That was cool. So we're going to briefly, did you read the epilogue 7.1, 7.2, and 7.3?
I did not get to them, unfortunately.
You're fine, because all they did was add more confusion to the pot.
Okay.
So in 7.1, I'm just going to read the synopsis and tell you what I read. So Cap is mourning Bucky, okay? And then Samuel L. Jackson's character?
Nick Fury.
Nick Fury, thank you. A white Nick Fury, which always throws me off, because my Nick Fury has always been black. You know,
I'm the other way around.
Oh, and that's understandable, because I started reading in the 90s when they changed it to be modeled after Samuel L. Jackson. Yes. So mine's always been the Sammy J one. Yours has always been the, well, I hate to say the David Hasselhoff one, but a much better actor than David Hasselhoff. But the dude, it can't happen now because of the MCU, but Robert Redford would have been a great White Fury.
Okay, yeah, I could see that. Yeah, back in the day.
If we really want to say Marvel movies made in the back of the day, John Wayne is Nick Fury. Oh, come on. John Wayne. Well, Iron Man, you're going to have to saddle up. I'm sorry. Do a horrible John Wayne. I'm not great at John Wayne. Anyway, back to the story. So he's mourning it. It gets revealed that Bucky's not dead. Bucky was just almost dead because he has a metal arm, which, no, it wasn't a hammer. She ripped his freaking arm off, and that's what she stabbed to his chest.
That's right.
She stabbed him. She did the Bill Cosby joke. I'm going to rip your arm off and beat you with it. So somehow he survived that with Nick Fury's help. And of course, in this particular storyline, Black Widow and Bucky are together. It wraps up that story saying, hey, everybody's going to believe he's dead. The only person that they know, the only people that know are Nick Fury, Black Widow, and now they reveal it to Captain America because he had to, or Steve Rogers rather, because he had to carry the burden of Bucky's death from the first time before he became Winter Soldier. He had to deal with him being Winter Soldier, and then he had him back as Bucky. And so Bucky's like, I'm not going to let you carry that burden again. You need to know I'm alive. It's okay. And then they set it up to spin off a series of Black Widow and Bucky stories to go out and rectify the wrongs that the Winter Soldier did. One of the last lines is, I'm getting my memories back now. Things are starting to slowly come back to me. And I'm starting to remember weapons, really bad juju weapons that I hid as part of this whole dastardly plan to take over the world. They're still out there and could fall into the wrong hands. So maybe this is the way I do good, is go and take care of these weapons and get rid of them. So they set that up as a nice little spinoff. 7.2 is about Thor. And so what I like about the prologues is we just read the core. We saw the core end. We're confused. The prologues kind of grab certain moments of the end of the core and expand on it. And this was kind of expanding on the funeral of Thor. Still didn't quite understand the whole Odin. I never picked up that was Kull that he took back. They replayed it here in the 7.2 epilogue. But here's the thing. So Thor is being burned on his pyre, and they start to have a party because that's what you do when you're Asgard, right? Or Irish. You know, you have the Irish wake. You party, celebrate the life. And all of a sudden, I mean, the fire is blazing, and somebody goes, what's that? And, like, the fire explodes, and this dark-haired dude comes out who I've never seen before, who kind of looks like Hercules, to be honest with you. And he comes out, and is Tannerus, and it's Tannerus is Thor's replacement, but nobody bats an eye. Not even Spider-Man. They're just, oh, look, that dude's back and he's going to replace Thor because he came out of the fire. Woo, drink more. And I'm going, here's a reference from the early 2000s, this horrible fake dating show reality thing that Spike did. But this one guy named Joe, he's very famous for, what is going on? That's kind of what I felt like. And then at the very, very last page of that, Thor's out in the cosmos somewhere, wakes up, and he has anger in his eye, and he's back. That's it. So presumably they go with that. 7.3 was great. Okay, 7.3, Fear Itself 7.3 is Iron Man, and he's dealing with the tragedies that just went down. He goes back to Paris to help do something, and they're tagging the statues and gently putting them in trucks. He's going to build a storage area till they can figure out what to do. And the Grey Gargoyle is locked up in some watery tank somewhere. And you see Tony come in, and the guard's like, look, I can give you a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and then they're going to check. So do whatever you're going to do. And the idea, the implication is that Tony's going to kill him, because it took so much out of Tony to realize what happened in Paris and this whole battle, and that the Great Gargoyle was a part of it. He just kind of focused all his anger there, and he lost his sobriety. I mean, he gave up his sobriety to fix this problem. So he's going to take it out on somebody. And he's telling the story to the Great Gargoyle in the thing and acting like he's going to kill him. But as he's telling the story, you're getting a little bit of flashes here and there of what happened after the fight. So ultimately, Tony went to Paris, declared, you know, blasphemy against Odin, called him out. Odin came and met him. And they had a little bit of a fight where Odin almost killed him. Short of killing him, said, you know what? I'm not going to heal you. You're going to have to deal with the tragedy. You're going to have to live with the pain, period. But you know what? I'll fix the rest. Essentially snaps his fingers. All the stones, statues are reverted back to humans. Uh-huh. And that then it goes back to the final panel where he was powering up his hand and brought it back and said, and basically that's why I'm not going to kill you today. Because sometimes the gods do come through or something like that. That was a great wrap up to that story, I thought.
So you say point three is worth picking up.
Point three is. Point one and two are still confusing as shit. But point three for me, it just touched on that human aspect of Tony Stark that we do tend to get lost in the stories, because he's covering it up always. You know, he's got armor around his heart, man. You know, he hides himself. But yeah, it was very raw and human, and I thought very good, yeah. So overall, good story. I mean, great narrative, great artwork, as we said in the last one. If you go to the wiki, you'll see a bunch of the stories that tie in, and they might give you some help. I will say, if you have Marvel Unlimited, go in the order they suggest, because they've basically gone back and reorganized it to not just be by release date, but by the way the story should be told.
Okay.
And it helps a little bit. Not a lot, but it helps a little bit.
Yeah, I think I'll revisit some of those so that I can expand the story a little bit. But cool. First, we will be tackling Civil War in the next episode.
That's right. I've finished the core, and I've gone back through. There are 99 issues in Civil War, by the way.
Yeah, originally I had read the main 7-issue series as that came out. And right. I also read, I think it was a 10-issue series called Frontline, which yes. featured Ben Urich, reporter mm-hmm. of the Daily Bugle, and a gal name I can...
And Hard... Oh, okay, yeah. He's got some girl that he talks to a
lot. Who's...
She's another reporter.
Works for an alternative paper.
Right. And Hardball is featured a lot in Frontlines.
Okay.
Is it Speedball? Speedball.
Speedball, yes.
Speedball, sorry. Speedball, who, you know... won't be in the movie. So if you're waiting for the movie, this is no spoiler, because he's a mutant, unless they change something. But Speedball
is not a mutant.
Damn it, George. I'm setting up something.
Yeah, Speedball got his powers from some weird dimension filled with bouncing dots.
Well, maybe we will get him in the story. We'll wait till the spoiler of Civil War to talk about what happened, but he sets off events. So he's a main character through the front line series of that. But there, yeah. So what I've been doing is, like I did with Fear Itself, is I read the core, which is 7 or 10 episodes, issues, and then went back and read it in the order that Marvel Unlimited is suggesting it, and it helps the puzzle pieces really fall into shape. You'll get the Runaways with Young Avengers. You'll get Frontline. You'll get some other things. It's not as disjointed as Fear Itself was. But yeah, I scanned ahead on the list. 99 issues for the complete entirety coverage of Civil War.
Yeah, it's no wonder there's confusion.
Yeah. Anything else on Fear Itself or anything else?
Overall, I enjoyed it. Before I tackled it, I had read that it wasn't a big hit with the fans. And after having read it, I'm going, why? I mean, I know it wasn't the perfect story, but I thought it was up there amongst the better ones.
I guess it just depends on what was happening at the time. And maybe they had... See, here's the thing about fans, right? You and I, George, we are very eloquent in speaking our displeasure. And we can pick apart, here's what we liked and here's what we didn't like. But it seems like a typical fan is like, what the hell, man? And they just get angry. So,
oh, they killed Winter Soldier.
That's awesome. All right. Well, you can find more of me over at From the Helicarrier, Breaking the Panel, of course, panel by panel here, and many other things. I've got a website, charlesmcfall.com. You'll find George over at From the Helicarrier from time to time. We'd love having him in.
Including the upcoming 100th episode.
Oh, I know, man. It's going to be exciting. I just talked to Ibbot today that you're going to be a part of that, and that makes me very happy. Very, very glad to have that. We, being the panel by panel, George and myself, we are part of Giant Sized Team Up Network. That's the network that Ibbot, Klotz, and I have launched to handle all of these things that we're talking about. So you can email us PXP, panel by panel, PXP at giantsizeteamup.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'll take your comments. And we release these shows every 2 weeks, give or take. So as you hear one, we easily address it on the next episode because it'll be a little while. Any last words before we get out of here, George?
Just one word. Excelsior.